Good evening. Welcome to the Designated Report Wrestling Podcast, Season 2, Episode 10. I'm your host, Corey, along with Khalib, as always. And we got a special guest in the building, Mr. Impact Wrestling himself, Moose. How you feeling today, brother?
I'm feeling great, man.
What's new in your life, man?
Today was a very crazy day, actually. I got in a car accident.
Oh, wow.
Everybody was fine. Nobody was hurt. It's just the fact that I got hit and the guy claimed that I hit him. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Just mind my business and you try to cut me off and you ran into my car.
Uh-oh. Seems like a scam to me.
Yeah, seemed like a scam, but like we got it all figured out and the cop had to come take care of it. So I've never been in a this is my first ever car accident. So
oh wow.
Wow.
Yeah. In 36 years, my first ever car accident was today. So
but everything's all good with you.
Yeah, everything's all good.
Good, man. Glad to hear that, man. So we're gonna start this off actually with a fitness question for you. Because I've noticed your body composition change immensely. So I want to know what brought that change.
Oh, what do you want to know? Honestly, it's...
I know you work out with Ciampa and you got Apollo there and EC3. So I know you guys work out very hard with, was it AJ Sims?
Yeah, AJ Sims, yeah. He's the mind behind the whole transformation. And he's really good at what he does, man. He's really good. And I met AJ about a year ago, actually, through EC3. Like, it's one of those things where I know COVID kind of like affected the whole world in a negative way. But in light of COVID, I actually met somebody that changed my life, you know what I'm saying, which is AJ, which that's a testament. So met him about a year ago, and him and EC3 was always trying to push me into the, oh man, you got to get better shape, man. You got to get better shape, man. You know, it's one of those things where people give you advice. You're like, yeah, I'll do it whenever I do it, like whatever. And, I actually like, thought about it and I was like, man, like the last few years in wrestling, I've just been coasting off of talent and never really actually, how do I say it? I guess put in the work aside of what my talent does for me.
Right.
So I was like, you know what? I'm going to use this COVID to actually work on what I look like physically.
Right.
And so. Started like eating right, working my ass off, made a lot of sacrifice. Like, it's even sad, like, because I mean, I'm happily married, but like, it got to a point where I was so focused on what I looked like that I didn't really spend that much time with my wife. And I was like, just 100% putting in the work and caring about what I looked like. And I mean, and the thing is, like, people don't really see the changes, like, month to month. It's just like, because I've been gradually changing, you know what I'm saying? But it's now like, you go from looking from one extreme to another extreme where people be like, damn, Moose looks different. But it didn't happen overnight. It took a year of me busting my ass, you know what I'm saying, and putting in the work to actually get like this.
I was going to say, I definitely noticed it, Moose. I definitely noticed it, you know, from like, I used to see you like 2 years ago and now I see you now. I'm like, this is a man who was really freaking went to the gym and you know, really busted his ass to look a certain way. And I noticed it with the ripped stomach and, you know, the abs I can see and all that, the shoulders is looking crazy, you know, and I'm the type of guy, you know, Hill Sparks right here on your Mike, I'm the type of guy, I body shame people, especially in wrestling. I say it all the time. I say, you know, these guys don't even work out. It seems like you took advice from somebody and said, you know what? Yeah, I got all the talent in the world, but I also want to look the part.
Right, yeah. And it's like, there's not a lot of people in wrestling, and this is what I'm starting to notice that actually have the total package where they have the talent, they look great, they are great on the mic. You know what I'm saying? There's not a lot, or, and also have a good presence. Like if you look at all the professional wrestling, there are guys who have like three of the four, two of the four, but there's not a lot of guys that's full with everything you need to be like a total package, which is the in-ring work, the athleticism, the presence, the mic skills, and then what your body look like.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that's what I took this year to set out. Like I already knew I had the in-ring stuff, and athletic-wise, I had that. That's pretty much talent. Like, but it was things like working on my mic skills and working on my presence and working on my physique. I took this whole year with COVID to actually improve those parts of it, which now I can actually say with confidence that I feel like I'm one of those guys that's like the total package, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I definitely agree. You know, I could like I said, cause I'm sort of a fan of yours. If you don't know, I really am. I really am. I do. I talk good about you a lot. I talked about you, and there's some other guys, but we don't need to talk about them right now. And I said, you know, and especially when I used to watch some of your matches, you have one of the best intros to a match I ever saw in my life.
I appreciate it.
You had a match where I forget the pay-per-view, but it was you had like the football team out.
I feel like that was the first pay-per-view I did with Impact Wrestling. That was
right.
Yeah.
And everybody was down with you. Everybody was doing the moose thing with the hand and everything. It was like you had the crowd.
Yeah.
Very impressive. So, and you're doing like what, 2 days, right? You're getting like that fasted cardio in the morning, then hitting the weights in the afternoon?
Yeah. My day actually starts at like 6:30 a.m. Some days it's even earlier, depending on what the group want to do. Like, I mean, like it's this last Thursday, it was funny. Tommaso had something he had to get done early. So we all woke up at like 4 a.m. So I had to get my faster cardio in at like 4:30 a.m. to meet the group at the gym at 6:30 to work out. So, but usually that was just a special occasion thing. But usually is I wake up at 6:30, hit my faster cardio, and then I'm at the gym by like 9. So I'm done working out for the day by at least 11.
Man.
Yeah.
That's very impressive, man. It's like me. You know, I don't know if you can tell. It's like me. You know, I'm in phenomenal shape as well.
I know you say you're a personal trainer, right?
Yeah, I'm a trainer. So, you know, I do the 2 days as well. You know, I get up, do my fasted cardio, and then I go heavy with my lifting, man. It depends on the days as well. So,
right.
Man, I'm very impressed, man. So, right. I like to transition
But the thing that people don't really understand is because I get a lot of people messaging me is my like, oh, what do you like? What's your workout regimen? I was like, honestly, like the workout is 30% of the work. It's like, it's the diet. And that's the thing people don't understand is like, you can work out 10 times a day, but if you eat like crap, you ain't going to see, you know, you're really not going to see that much of a difference. Like, but it's like, it's the diet. That's the hard part of it, is like being consistent, like measuring your food, weighing your food, like making sure you're taking the right amount of protein and the right amount of carbs and the right amount of fat with each meal. Like that's a hard part. The working out part, the cardio part, that's the easy part. Like that's easy. It's the food part that's the hard part.
Yeah, I agree. The food is always the hard part, because like you said, you know, you can go out there and lift 10 times a day, but if you're going out there and eating McDonald's right after your workout, it just negates everything.
It just negates everything. Yeah, like you're just canceling it out.
That's crazy. So let me transition to the NFL. So you were NFL player formerly, and then in 2016 I think you made your debut at Impact Wrestling. So tell me about that. Like, how was the transition going from like an NFL pro athlete going into professional wrestling?
It's definitely different. I would say the NFL was way stressful. it was more stress. Actually, it was even harder. Like, I get this question all the time, what's harder, wrestling or football? I'm like, easy. Football is 10 times harder. I mean, there's a reason why you have 5-6 months off season before you play a regular season, and wrestling is year round because it's, imagine having playing football year round. Like, you'll be having people dying at like 35, 30, you know, because of how impactful and brutal that sport is. The transition, I mean, honestly, the transition was easy because I feel like personally, once you do something that you really love, it comes easy, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I really wanted to be a wrestler ever since I was 10 years old. So I knew whenever I was going to get the opportunity to get into it, it was going to be fun and it was going to be something I wanted to do, and it wasn't going to be any pressure at all. And that's exactly what happened.
Okay, so was it a situation where you knew you wanted to be a wrestler ever since you was 10, but you were just so good at football, you was like, well, this is a way for me to, you know, get into college, or, you know, and then when I'm done with all that, I can just easily go into professional wrestling. Like, it wasn't something that you did right out of high school.
Exactly what it was. It was like one of those things where I played football, honestly, in high school just to hang out with my friends. I came up in a rough neighborhood, so my mom was real strict on, oh, no, after school, you have to get your ass back home, you know? So I figured playing football would be a chance to give me a couple of more hours with my homeboys and some of my friends at school. And just one of those things, I got a scholarship. And I mean, like, what kid would tell their mom, like, oh, I don't want to take this free ride to college, you know what I'm saying, because I want to be a wrestler. And then the same thing, like, I never thought I would be drafted by an NFL team. So it's like, what kid would turn down $300,000-$400,000 at 20 years old to be like, oh, no, I want to be a professional wrestler, you know? So just one of those things where, like, I knew what my end goal was going to be, which is wrestling, but I didn't know, first of all, I didn't know what you needed to do to become a wrestler when I was that young. I didn't even know how to become a wrestler after I knew I was done with the NFL. Like, because luckily, I played with John Laurinaitis. His dad was the late Animal. I mean, I'm sorry. His Animal was his dad. Right. And, was it John Laurinaitis with WWE was his uncle. So when I told him, I was like, hey, man, I'm trying to get into wrestling. He was like, oh, I'll give my uncle a phone call. And within a week, he got me a tryout. And after the tryout, I got hurt, and that whole WWE route didn't happen. But that's when I realized then that they had schools you could go to train to be a wrestler. I didn't know that. Like, I just thought that you would call WWE and they would either sign you and train you, or they wouldn't. I didn't know there was, like, actually schools around the country that you could go pay money to train to be a wrestler. I didn't even know there was such thing as an indie in 2013 when I decided to make that transition. I didn't know that the indies was a thing. I didn't know about Ring of Honor. I knew about Impact Wrestling because, I mean, it was TNA back in the day, and I knew about TNA. I knew about ECW. I used to watch it, but I didn't know companies like Ring of Honor was a thing. I didn't know independent wrestling was a thing. I didn't know none of that. I just thought that, hey, to be a wrestler, you should have to call one of these companies and they'll take a look at you. If they like you, then they'll train you and get you going, you know?
Right. Now you spoke on the independent stuff. I remember, you know, I was what pay-per-view was I watching? I was watching All Out. I believe that's what it was called. I believe you was in a battle royal.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember that was I was at a bar where I watched all these sort of wrestling events. And then when you came in, you know, that bar was really, they was really into you, Moose. They really was. It's a bar in New York City. It's called Legends. And they were really into you. You came in, they were saying the Moose thing and everything. I mean, do you get, like, people that just randomly come up to you and, like, know you as that character and just know you as that.
Moose. I mean, I wouldn't say all the time, but quite a bit. I was like at a job, I'll be at the gym, and somebody be like, "Hey, you're Moose." So I'll be usually I get it at the airport. When I usually get people coming up to me, recognizing me. It's usually at the airport. If I also put a percentage of it, I would say 90% of the time is at the airport when people come to, people actually recognize who you are. It's been a long journey, man. And honestly, I'm happy the way it worked out. I'm happy I went the route that I went. And I'm happy that my first WWE tryout didn't go as good as it should have, because I would have hated to be one of those guys to start their career in WWE and not experience going to Japan and going to Mexico and going to England and going all over the, you know what I'm saying, the globe, and taking the route that I took, because I feel like I've learned more taking this route than if everything would have went picture perfect and I started right at WWE, you know.
Right.
How many independent promotions did you go through before you hit Impact?
Oh, I didn't even, Impact wasn't even the first company I started with. The first company I signed a contract to was with Ring of Honor. Mm-hmm. And I worked with Ring of Honor for 2 years, I believe. I signed with Ring of Honor in 2013, and I signed with Impact in June of 2016. So I was with Ring of Honor for about 2.5 years.
Wow, yeah. That's impressive.
Yeah, so I couldn't even tell you how many independent companies I've worked for. I mean, at least 1,000. I mean, I'm still doing, I'm still doing indies right now. So it's like, yeah. Some of the funniest things is like when a fan hits me up and be like, "Hey, I met you at this indie in Kentucky called XFZ. And I'm like, "I work for them?" Like, I mean, I don't remember. Like,
yeah, that's amazing. I mean, you know, and speaking of which, you know, with the indies and everything, you've been with Impact for about 4 or 5 years, right?
June will be 5 years.
With
the company, yeah.
Right. So let me just ask a question about Impact for a second. How do you feel about their working relationship right now with AEW?
I have mixed emotions about it. Like, I really don't know what it's consisted of. Like, they don't tell us anything. I just see what you guys see on TV. But my honest opinion about it, without being disrespectful and without talking rude about a company I work for, it kind of rubs me like how the relationship with Ring of Honor and New Japan is. And that's and us being Ring of Honor and AEW being New Japan, that's how I kind of see it. I don't know what the details of the working relationship is. Obviously, I think is at this point now is helping us out because it's more eyes on our product and everybody want to know, oh, what's Kenny gonna do and what's going on. But I can't really speak much of it because honestly, I don't know much about it to speak of it. You know, like they don't tell us stuff. It's funny, like we find out news just the same way the fans and the media finds their news out is on Twitter or on social media. It's not like there's a big email chain letting us know that, hey, we're going to be doing this with this company and blah, 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 blah. We don't know anything. Like, we only find out when everybody else finds out on Twitter. Like, you know, that's how I found out about, I didn't even know Kenny Omega was supposed to be, I didn't even know there was supposed to be a working relationship with AEW until it popped up on Twitter. Like, I didn't know that. Like,
right.
So they keep it a secret from us, but like just from the outside looking in, that's what it looks like to me. But only time would would tell what that relationship consists of, you know?
Okay.
Okay.
I see what you're saying.
And that brings me to another point, because you mentioned you've been with Impact for 5 years. So in this climate of wrestlers always going from back and forth to different organizations, what made you so loyal to Impact Wrestling?
That's a good question.
Because cut you off, because I mean I've always been a huge fan of yours, and I always said you're like one of the best big men in the game. So I've always wondered, like, man, this guy is like so loyal to his company. I know that there's so many suitors for him. So that's just something I've always thought about.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, to answer your question, I think one of the reasons, if Scott D'Amore wasn't in control of Impact Wrestling, I probably would have left a while ago. Me and Scott, we have like a big brother, little brother relationship. It's almost like the father that I never had in my life, you know what I'm saying? But I look at him more like a big brother. I think to answer your question, that's why I've been so loyal all these years. But it comes to a point, man, I think everybody knows that my contract is coming up here soon. And everybody's asking me, oh, what am I gonna do? And what's gonna happen? And where are you going? And I honestly have no idea. Like, this is my first time ever being in this situation and without like just signing back to Impact and testing the waters, I guess you could call it. But I'm like, it's just one of those things where like, I don't know if you guys watch basketball. There was a time, and I'll use the late great Kobe Bryant, where he just wanted to see what the market was for himself. And like, even though he didn't leave LA, he just wanted to see, oh, if I was to leave LA, like what would I be worth? And I think it's one of those things for me where like, I'm not saying I'm leaving Impact, but I am excited to see what could be out there, you know?
Got you. And yeah. if Kobe did leave the Lakers, he should have went to the Knicks, but that's another story.
Yeah.
But Moose, let me say something. You're a big guy, man. I watch wrestling now. Listen, I'm the body shame guy. Okay.
Yeah.
I watch wrestling now. I see a bunch of small guys. Okay. And it kind of makes me think like somebody like you, who 6'5", big guy, muscles. How is it competing with these smaller guys? Do you find it a struggle? Because sometimes I see you go up against certain, I don't even call their names out, certain guys that I think is kind of small, and I go, a Moose would kill this person. Like, why is this match competitive? Do you ever feel that way? Because I feel that way sometimes watching the match.
I feel that way a lot, and I feel like it's a generation we're in right now. Like, the generation I grew up watching wrestling, like, especially with the WWE, all their champions were heavyweights, big guys. Like, you never saw a guy like you would never see a guy like back in the day, like, and nothing like a guy like Daniel Bryan, which is one of my favorites, like one of my favorite wrestlers in the world. But in the era I grew up watching wrestling, you would never see a guy like him hold the title.
You would never see that.
Yeah. Like, I think during the Attitude Eras is when they started giving smaller guys a chance, guys like Bret the Hitman Hart and Shawn Michaels. And but like when I started watching wrestling, like in the 90s, like,
that's right.
You saw guys like Hogan and Andre and like bigger guys like Taker, yes, like Yokozuna, like all their champions was like big, huge, bigger than life. And I feel like as a generation passes by, the champions get smaller and smaller and smaller. And it is what it is. I mean, wrestling, there's no facts to wrestling. I mean, at the end of the day, like if you put me in a match, like for instance, a match I had with Rich Swann, which one of my good buddies and probably one of the best wrestlers in the world.
I was gonna bring him up.
Yeah, we're both it's up to both of us to tell that story on how a guy his size could keep up with a guy my size and win a match. I mean, because I mean, in the actual real fight, obviously it would be a no contest. But like, this is pro wrestling, it's not a real fight, it's like storytelling. So you have to tell that story on how it makes sense that a guy my size would lose to a guy his size, you know what I'm saying? And that's the fun thing about wrestling. Like, we get to create the story, and we get to create it in a way that the fans love it and it makes sense. And without killing me and without killing him, you know, because we're both at the same time world champions and superstars, you know? Right. So, I mean, like, I don't hate it. If it was real, then yeah, it'll probably rub me the wrong way, but it's pro wrestling. Like, I mean, we have to do a great job telling that story. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And for the most part, I think everybody does it. Like, I mean, when Daniel Bryan had his run at being a world champion, he told the phenomenal stories on how he beat some of the big opponents that he did. I mean, he's one of the best wrestlers in the world, so obviously he would. But like, I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't hate it. It's just about the generation we're in. And don't, I mean, it might be 10 years from now when the champions are even smaller and they might have to tell a better story. Or we might go in a generation where it goes back to how it was in the 80s, where most of the champions are big guys. Like, you don't know. You just have to evolve with the generation you're in, you know?
You're right. Maybe I'm out of the loop. You're right, Moose. I'm 38. I'm out of it, because I see these bigger guys losing to smaller guys, and it just rubs me the wrong way. And I'm just like, I don't get it. But you're right. Maybe it's a generational thing. And Daniel Bryan is a cool guy and everything, but I just want to know that.
And going off that storytelling, and I won't bring up any like organizations or people like that, but do you think there's a little too many flips and dives going on in professional wrestling? Because when I see a match where I know there's going to be a certain dive, and when a wrestler is working on somebody's leg and then all of a sudden they're hitting like this huge hurricanrana, do you think like there needs to be a little more storytelling and less flips? How do you feel about that?
In my mind, the funny thing about that question is my mind have changed. I've went from one side of the spectrum to the other side of the spectrum. If you watch my work, when I first started, I was one of those guys who relied on doing dives and doing flips and doing all that stuff. And then the older I got, I realized I'm 6'5", 265 pounds. I don't need to be doing dives. Yeah, it's cool that I could do it, and people by now should know that I'm capable of doing anything. But like, I don't need to do it. And one thing that I feel like, and this is why I don't put myself in the same like level as other big guys. And I use the whatever you call it, the wrestling guy, the best big or whatever, is because I don't need to do a dive or do a flip to show how good I am. Like, all you other big guys could do that. I'm gonna be hardcore and beat the fuck out of people and be mean and be brutal, and that's how I'm going to show that how good I am as a big guy. But I do think there are times and there are matches and there's certain parts of wrestling where flips and dives are needed. I mean, like, look at Lucha guys. Like, you go to a Lucha Libre show, that's what you're going to see is flips and dives and backflips and this and that. Or you see a guy that like Ricochet, one of my best friends, and that's what he's known for doing is like flips and like all that. So yeah, but I don't think, like, I think one thing, especially with big guys, I feel like every big guy thinks in their mind is, oh, I'm gonna show the world I'm a good wrestler because I could do a backflip and I could do a dive and I could do, and it's like, that doesn't show me anything. That just shows that you're athletic. That doesn't show that you're actually, you know what I'm saying, good at pro wrestling. It just shows that you're athletic. Like, hand clap, round of applause, you could do a flip. Like, you know what I'm saying? But I do think big guys have used flips and athletic movement and stuff like that as an easy way to, what they call a cheap pop, an easy way to get over, because that's what fans in this generation wants to see. But to, I don't need that. Like, I could get over without doing one flip or one whatever in a match. Like, there's not times where I don't do it. Like, yeah, in the big championship match, like, that I had against Rich Swann, like, I'll pop out something out the bag, but then you're not going to see that again for another 6-7 months or whatever it is until I feel like, oh, I have another big match, another big moment coming up. Let me pop this out, which that's how I feel like stuff like that should be used, especially as big guys. But like watching Monday Night Raw and seeing two big guys wrestling, you see one guy do a step up run or like a front flip off the, like, I'm like, oh, is that really needed? Like, come on.
No, exactly. Oh,
you are speaking the truth, Moose. You are speaking the truth. Exactly. We Kaleeb and I, we always talk about that. And I don't want to sound fake, because we also talk about Ricochet sometimes. And I like Ricochet, right? I'm gonna transition this a little bit. So I've always liked Ricochet, but there's one thing about him, like, I feel like he's missing the promo aspect of wrestling. So do you think like the promo aspect of it, like, really can make or break a wrestler?
And that's, I think it can, but like honestly, in my personal opinion, and I'm not being biased, I think Ricochet is one of the best wrestlers in the world. Mm-hmm. And people ask me this question all the time, because you see a guy like Will Ospreay, a guy who looked up to Ricochet, but he's in a different limelight than Ricochet. And I think the only difference between those two, because I think Ricochet is in ring better than Will Ospreay. I think Ricochet is smoother than Will Ospreay. I think Ricochet has more of a presence than Will Ospreay. But one thing Ricochet, or Trevor, I rarely call him Ricochet, I call him Trevor. One thing Trevor lacks is, and Ospreay has, is you could see Ospreay in a match and be like, oh, fuck, Ospreay's going to kill somebody. And you don't see that with Trevor. And I me and Trevor talk about this all the time, and that's something he's working on, to just have that meanness come out. And it's like, and the thing about it, Trevor's not a mean guy, so it's hard for you to, if you're not a mean guy, you're always a nice guy outside of wrestling, it's going to be hard to present yourself as being this guy that has this killing instinct. And I think that's the only thing he's missing. That's my personal opinion. I think his promos are good. I think they're good enough. I just think he's lacking that killer instincts, that presence. Like if you see Trevor walk in the ring, nobody believes that Trevor's gonna kill somebody. Like, no. Trevor's gonna, you don't believe that. Like, and that's one thing Ospreay has. I think the only thing Ospreay has over Trevor is, like, I could watch a Will Ospreay match and have some kind of belief that Ospreay is going to hurt somebody because he's that pissed. And that's one thing Trevor is missing. And once he gets that, I think the fucking world is his once he gets that killer instinct in him.
I mean, I always say that about Ricochet. I always say, you know, Ricochet, he's very athletic, you know, but he kind of looks like an Abercrombie and Fitch model. And I'm like, ain't no disrespect to Ricochet, but this is what I think about when I look at him. I'm like, what model agency is he in? Is he modeling the Gap clothes? Calvin, you know, this is what I think of Ricochet. It's not that I don't see Ricochet and I don't go, damn, that's a really athletic guy. I go, yeah, I know that's an athletic guy. He's flipping. He's doing all types of flips. But like you said about Will Ospreay, and I'm not the biggest fan of Will Ospreay either, but Will Ospreay does have that look about him where it looks like he does want to F somebody up when he looks at him.
Right, yeah. And honestly, and I don't think that's something hard for Trevor. I think Trevor just, once he figures how to bring that out, then fuck, he's going to be, I mean, he's already in a great position, but he's going to be even better, solid superstar. Like, he's going to be pushed like a superstar, because I think that's, I mean, I've never been a WWE, like, but I feel like that's what he's missing, is that killer instinct. Like, when you look at him and you don't see model, but you see like oh man, he's going to really fuck somebody up. Like, and I mean, maybe he lets his hair grow out and lets his beard grow out and just come out.
Something.
Like, something. I mean, I don't know what it is, but I honestly, in my opinion, I think that's what he's missing. Like,
he should have came in as a heel, like me. Just heal it up.
Yeah.
From the beginning of his life.
But that's the thing, but like, working it, like, I'm sure Ricochet could work, be a heel and do a great job of being a heel, but at the end of the day, does he still give up that vibe? Like, man, he's really gonna kill somebody. Like, he has the potential to actually fuck somebody up. Right. That, and like, that's, I don't know how he gets that look, but that's a look that he needs to, like, he needs to find, like, that mean streak. Like, you know what I'm saying? And, in my personal opinion, coming from like one of his best friends, I think that's the only thing he's like, because he has everything else. He, like, everybody talks about his promo. I think his promos are great. I just think the believability of him hurting somebody and like that mean streak is all he's missing.
And is that one thing that you're looking at too? Because I feel like, because you're going to be potentially a free agent soon, you sell talking about maybe testing the waters. And do you see a guy like Ricochet who has everything, but maybe it's the writing of WWE? Do you also look at that, the way certain organizations treat their wrestlers? Like, I'm just going to throw it out there. Let's say, because I don't think WWE can write for a babyface, but, you know, they can definitely write for a heel or a AEW. I mean, every big man that goes to AEW, they are consistently beat. So, is that something that you look at too? Because I know it's still storytelling. I know, you know, it's not real fighting, but is that something that you look at to destination-wise?
Yeah, it's definitely something I look at. But at the end of the day, I feel like everybody has their own pen and pad and writes their own future. So I don't think just because if I go to WWE, I'm going to be in the same position as, like, for instance, Samoa Joe, like, and like, or some, or people who have been let go, or people who haven't been used right. I think everybody's different. Like, I mean, like, do I take those things to account? Yes, but at the back of my mind, I also know that everybody has a different story to write. Like my analogy is like, look at Tom Brady. Whoever knew that fifth round draft pick would be the best quarterback in the world? Like, he wrote his own story. Like, and it's, that's for everybody to write their own story when they, whatever decisions they make, is there a pen, is there a pad, and is there a story? And that's the freedom they have for them to write. I mean, who knows, if I choose to go to AEW, I might be a big man that loses, but I also could be a guy who's, that beats Kenny Omega for the world title. I mean, who, like, we wouldn't know until that time comes. And like, so I'm not gonna use everybody's misfortunes of places they've been to make my, that's not gonna be the reason that I decide to do something or not do something because of somebody else. I'm gonna make that decision on how I'm feeling in that moment when it's time for me to make that decision.
Interesting. Man, you're throwing some gems out there, Moose. Throwing some gems.
Yeah. So let me ask you something, Moose. If we could just go back a little bit back to your childhood. Like, growing up, like, who was the wrestlers that you looked up to?
Oh, growing up, Ric Flair was definitely, Flair was who got me into wrestling. Like, the first ever wrestling show I watched was a 92 Rumble.
The greatest Royal Rumble, by the way.
The greatest Royal Rumble of all time, yes, where Flair won it. Yes. I think it was whoever won it became the new WWF World Champion, and he won it. And, I forgot who it wasn't Hogan who he eliminated. I think Hogan helped him eliminate, I forget who it was.
No, what it was Sid Vicious. And Hogan and Sid Vicious eliminated Hogan, and Hogan was so upset.
Hogan eliminated,
And he pulled down Sid Vicious, and then Ric Flair pulled them out and won the title.
Yeah, that was, and so he got me into wrestling. So I got to pick him number one. Obviously, mm-hmm. Hulk Hogan was everybody's favorite. Like, if you was a kid and didn't like Hulk Hogan, then you really wasn't a kid. Like, Ultimate Warrior, one of my biggest, like, I was a huge fan of Triple H. People talk about, like the top five best wrestlers of all time, and they're always, and a lot of people don't mention Triple H, and I'm like, how can you not mention Triple H? He's, like, legit has accomplished it all, has done it all, like, right. legit done it all. So he's definitely one of my favorite. Believe it or not, I was a huge fan of Goldberg. And I still say this to this day, nobody else in wrestling has the presence that Goldberg had in his run.
Moose, let me just say, you have great taste. Because all you're doing is picking the people that I like.
Like, nobody. I have this argument with my friends all the time. They were like, what about Taker? And I was like, yeah, Taker had a lot of, don't get me wrong, Taker was great, but he had a lot of, like, what do I call it? Like, green screens to make his presence look great. Like, a lot of animation where Goldberg, just his music and him walking out and, like, to this day, I think Goldberg has the best presence in all the professional wrestling. Brock was another big favorite of mine. Razor Ramon, Randy Savage,
and all those guys was like that. That was the influences that you had growing up.
Yeah, and then if you like, the funny thing about it, if you watch my evolution, and if you watch me just as a pro wrestler, like, you can see a little bit of all of those guys in me. Like,
I remember you did that Ultimate Warrior thing. I remember with the tassels and everything.
Yeah.
So I want to leave off with one question to you. If you had a dream match, like, who would be, like, individual, like, from the past that you would like to wrestle, and maybe somebody right now?
From the past, I would like to wrestle. That's a good one. If it was from the past, I would probably say Hogan.
Hmm.
And just because if he was like that super baby face, and I feel like I'm one of the best heels at it right now, so that would make for a great combination. Definitely same with Randy Savage. Definitely Randy Savage. And then right now, if I was to pick one that could possibly still happen, actually, I'll probably say Triple H.
Triple H, huh? Okay. Do you have Triple H in your top five?
Yeah, he's definitely my top five.
Top five. Wow. Okay. I'm not going to judge you, Moose. You know, Triple H trips in my top, 15.
No, I would definitely put Trips in my top five. And the reason why I'll put him in my top five, when you talk about the greatest heels in wrestling, number one would probably be Vince McMahon.
Okay.
And who would be number two?
Flair.
No, I that's the thing. I don't think Flair was. I think Flair was a heel, but, like, he was so good as being a heel that he was loved for being. Being dirt, so I don't really consider him a heel. Right. A heel is somebody that everybody fucking hated.
Everybody
fucking hated. And to me, to this day, Vince McMahon will always be number one, and number two will always be Triple H, because I've never seen Triple H especially when. Like, I've never really even seen Triple H like a real full-time babyface. Like, he was always hated. Like, true. Always fucking hated. Like, so you have to put, a guy like that, like a guy who was like in wrestling, the greatest heel in professional wrestling. He can't be in the top five. Like, that. Come on. Like,
I see. Yeah, you got a point. You got a good point there. I didn't think of it like that.
Then you think about all the accomplishments he's had, like, 13-time world, even though it's not real, like, it's all scripted. Yeah, I get it. But think about the accomplishments he's had, like all the titles he's won and everything he's done while he's been there, and how many WrestleMania his main evented, and like him being what he's doing now with the company, and him being the greatest wrestling heel, because Vince wasn't a wrestler. He was more of a manager type, you know what I'm saying? So if you're talking about wrestling heel, then Triple H is number one. Like, I can't think of no other heels that I will put wrestler-wise who I will put above him.
Mm-hmm. Wow. He made some good points, man.
That's a good point.
You know, he's number six for me now, man. He's number six now. Yeah, he was number 15. I'm gonna put him at six.
Yeah.
And then you also another thing you have to think about too is like all the different evolutions he's made from this rich preppy kid to, you know what I'm saying, to the D-Generation X, to do you want to play the game, to corporate H. Like, he's made a lot of different transitions and changes where you're like, he's done it all. Like, every character that he's brought on screen, he's made every single one of them work, and you've hated him for every single one of them. You hated him when he was Hunter Hearst Helmsley, he was hated. You hated him when he was Corporate H, he was hated. You hated him when he was D-Generation H, you hated him. You hated him when he was the one to play the game H. Like, you've all, every character he has brought to the table, you've hated every single one of them. Like, not as a heel, like, he obviously did his job. Like, he's definitely the top five, and he's a great talker, probably one of the best promos in wrestling, great in-ring worker. Like, he has it all, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They make a good point, because like, I feel like now, I don't know if you agree with this, because maybe he's now, like
the total package. Like, I will put him on there before I put a guy like Shawn. He's up there before Shawn Michaels for me, because he's the total package. Like, he can talk, he has presence, he had the look, like, he's accomplished it all. Like,
no, that makes sense, because I didn't think about that, because a lot of the, like, I feel like maybe I'm wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong. Back in the day, people, the heels wanted to be hated, but I feel like now the heels are
want to be liked.
They want to have the 5-star matches. They want to. They're looking at the dirt sheets.
Yeah,
now I'm not gonna name any names.
They think a certain idiot will give them 5 stars and or make their day. That's what these heels thinking now, you know.
Right.
And people joke on me because I like Jinder Mahal and King Corbin. You know why? Because they like being hated.
Yeah, I love those guys. Like, I'm a big fan of Corbin, and I'm also a big fan of Jinder, because these are guys who love being hated. They don't care for chairs. Yeah. They go in there and they get their job done, and their job is to get the babyface cheered and for everybody to boo them. And that's what a heel is supposed to do.
Exactly. A heel is not supposed to care about flips and kicks. A heel doesn't care about flips and kicks. A heel only cares about breaking hips. Yeah.
Man, okay. So, my man Moose, we definitely appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much. I know you got to go get up in the morning, get that 5 a.m. cardio.
Yeah, tomorrow I actually get to sleep in, but I wake up about 9:30, 10. I got an hour of faster cardio, so tomorrow sucks. Tomorrow's my off day, but my off day usually consists of an hour faster cardio, which sucks. Wow. So, yeah.
I hear you, brother. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and I guess my last question is, you know, I mean, I lift hard. I lift heavy, so when am I going to be able to lift with you guys?
Make it down to Orlando. We'll figure something out.
I mean, I'm not sure if you see my gram, but I lift, man. I lift heavy.
I check it out. Like, I see it. Yeah. make it out to Orlando. We'll figure something out. We'll put a guest appearance.
All right. I'm gonna hold you to that, man. Thank you so much, Moose, and definitely appreciate it. And we hope everything goes well with you, man.
All right, thank you, man.
All right, peace, brother.
Appreciate it.